Welcome to the Lost Boys, the Found Fathers podcast. I'm Gabe O'Sullivan, and joining me is my co-host, Will Haycox. We are men who have suffered the loss of a child, and through this production, we desire to offer encouragement, strength, and hope to our fellow brothers who have traveled the same journey. Good morning, Will.
Good morning, Gabe.
So we have my buddy, our fellow church member, and friend, Mayor Josh Simpson, with us today. So welcome, Josh.
Good morning, Gabe and Will. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, man. Hey, we're so glad that you're here, dude.
I just want to really cut him real quick. Can we put, like, hail to the chief at this point?
Right, I know. Here? I'm going to call him Your Excellency.
Excellent. Sounds good.
or Your Eminence.
It feels nice having a mayor. You know, I feel like we're somebody now.
That's so true. That is right, man. So, yeah. So Josh and I met last year teaching or helping with VBS in the recreation, and struck up conversation, got to know each other, been able to hang out some throughout the year, and man, just really grown to appreciate and love Josh and what he does and around the church with his family and the community, man, just been super thankful for your friendship. And so, you know, with this podcast, obviously, again, we exist, you know, to help men who have suffered the loss of a child, but we also exist to help men who are on that journey of fatherhood too, and being a husband, being a father. And so Josh, you know, said some things to me that were super impactful in our conversations, and I was like, man, we gotta have Josh on the show. And so, man, I'm very thankful that you're here. So tell us about a little bit about yourself right now, like you are, your wife, kids, like what do you do for work, like how in the world did you become the mayor, you know, like, and so, yeah, let's just get
I don't
into
know.
That.
I don't know, Gabe. I don't know. Right. Who is Josh Simpson? Yeah, good. So currently, right. Currently, I live in Reedville. I'm the mayor of Reedville, South Carolina. I'm married to my wife, Kelsey. We've been together for almost 14 years, married for almost six, so coming up this summer. We met back in high school, high school. So, you know, I was, it's interesting, I was listening to, was it a couple weeks ago, we were giving the students some statistics around the chances you find your soulmate or wife or husband in high school, and they were extremely low. And I said, okay, even prove further. I'm in that rare air, I guess.
The stats, and you're like, just don't do what I did, kids.
Yes, you know, like, yes.
I'm the exception, not the rule.
Yes,
that's awesome. And so y'all, that was at Union.
I was at Union, right? Yeah. Grew up in Union, South Carolina. I'm saying it on record now. I don't typically tell people that. No, I'm kidding. I'm proud of that. And we, like I said, married almost 6 years. This summer, we have two kids. My oldest is my son, Kai. He is five. My daughter, Corey, is three. And we have a child that is on the way due here in a couple weeks. Okay, so gotcha. that'll be, I tell people, father to almost three.
That's so cool.
So man, we're excited about his arrival. It is a boy.
Okay.
So, yeah, thank you. Thank you. That's great. And so, we've been in, technically in Reedville for about 2 years coming up. Okay. However, prior to that, we were in Greenville for a number of years, and which is through work. And, you know, my background is traditionally in sales and consulting. And so I currently consult for a firm as well out of Atlanta right now, focusing on training and development for corporations. But outside of that, obviously, yes, I have some mayoral duties, I guess, so to speak. So, yeah.
Cool. Man, yeah, and just so everyone in podcast and YouTube world and Facebook world know, Josh sounds, you know, he's a mayor, right? So you would think, oh, man, this guy's 55 years old. No, Josh is the youngest mayor, right, in history of Reedville. So
that's pivotal. Yeah, we'll actually probably get into a bit of that and what that means, you know, to me and why I kind of pursued that route. But I was technically the youngest mayor elected at 29 years old. My wife is older. I won't say her age, but she's older. She's wiser. Yes, wiser. And you know, and I was actually the first Black American elected as mayor of Reedville as well. So yeah.
That's so cool, man. Yeah, we're just thankful for you, man, and, you know, the impact you're making
in
that community, which is a very up-and-coming community, you know, in our neck of the woods here, you know. And so the fact that you're there and you're going to be able to have that positive impact there, you know, on that community is just awesome, man. Mm-hmm. So we're thankful for your servant-heartedness because I can't imagine, like, juggling a family and a busy, I mean, you're very busy in work and what you do, right? And then also doing the mayoral responsibilities and and duties too. So yeah, even though I don't live in Reeville, I live close to Reeville.
Yes.
And so thank you, man, for what you're doing down there. So yeah, that's a little bit about you, man. Tell us about you know, coming up, man. What was it like growing up in Union, South Carolina?
Yeah. So Union is, you know, one of those places where you know, the most traffic you see is probably in a drive-through on Sunday. Mm-hmm. So very small town, and the city is even smaller, right? And so I grew up right in the heart, and you know, all I knew, maybe a little bit opposite of what children know today, was to be outside. You know, the screen door was actually locked, I think, from 9 to 5. I'm not sure in the summer. Yeah. So, because there was a water, what we call it, spigot, back in
there. That's right.
And sprints and sprints and water.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, growing up there, I think it was culturally diverse, right? I mean, we had a number of people with various backgrounds, industries, you know, race, religion, that I was able to, I think, connect with at an early age. And that is what allowed kind of some of that perspective to be a little bit more open as I grew up, because, you know, you come across how to deal with, you know, different people, you know, transparently.
Yeah.
You may walk up the street to a gas station and dealing with some people that like to hang outside of there, you know, all the way to dealing with, people whose parents are, you know, esteemed backgrounds, you know, and you want to learn more about how they ended up in the position they are. And so I got a range of perspective, and it really helped me understand where I wanted to fit in this world as I grew up.
Yeah.
And so I think the two biggest pieces to growing up there were having my mother's soul influence and not having my father's influence at all.
Mm.
Those are two, you know, one is not more important than the other.
Wow.
And I say that because everything my mother taught me was also shaped through the lens of not having a father. And we didn't talk about that, but it was always there, you know, because I would ask questions as a child. You know, you get in and you get old enough to where you know, you come to the conclusion of where, you know, how can you not want to be around me? Like, I'm awesome. You know, that's at sure. first, you know, I had a pretty big head back in the day. But on a serious note, yeah, how could you not want to be around and see your kid, you know, grow and thrive and step into these different stages of life? I think sports, again, was kind of that foundation. My mom worked a lot. So I, a lot of times, was responsible for, I have two younger brothers who are kind of significantly younger than me, but I would be responsible for, you know, getting them ready on the bus. You know, it wasn't abnormal for me to get up at 5, get myself ready, then get my brothers ready, walk them to the bus, come back, catch a ride, or walk to school.
Wow.
So that was just normal. And whatever, you know, we're familiar with, we don't think of anything outside of that. That was just my reality.
Mm-hmm.
And so sports was a way of channeling, you know, attention, certain aggression, and also seeking guidance. So it was a way of, you know what sports can bring. I don't know if you both, you know, had that background, but, you know, I played a number of sports, but I really took a liking to baseball.
Okay.
And that was probably the one I was worst at. You know, I sucked until I was about 10, 11 years old. But I love baseball. And so that kind of framed up, you know, gave what we kind of connected on, certain influences being introduced at key points in my background, you know, in my life, that you look back and say, wow, if I wouldn't have met, you know, Gerald at 10 or David at 13 or Jason at 18, you know, my life probably would look a little bit different, because they were important male figures that had an influence at influential stages, right? Yeah. Kids are easily, even your most academic, you know, those with that academic prowess, those with good backgrounds, they're still heavily influenced at those checkpoint ages, right? Preteen, teenager, puberty. And so that was that, you know, moving into that spot kind of started to frame up those people that I were meeting through sports and baseball. Yeah. That kind of took a liking to me. Yeah.
Yeah, we talk a lot about sports on this show, you know. We both have experienced, like you said, the positive benefits of being in that sports environment growing up and all the lessons that we learned there. Right. And so, you know, you had mentioned to me about some of those guys, some of those coaches, right? Mm-hmm. Some of those, your buddies' dads, I guess, and how they, you know, were able to, I guess, kind of fill that gap. Yeah. You want to speak to that maybe just a little bit? I just think that was really impactful.
Yeah. So, and this is all coming from at a time where I don't have a very grand exposure to faith.
Okay.
You know, and that's all right to kind of go into that. Yeah, absolutely. I thought so. Yeah. I don't have a parents with that background. Mm-hmm. And my environment and the people I was around, that wasn't priority. Mm-hmm. You know, good people, but that wasn't the priority. And their decisions weren't made through the lens of, you know, Christianity, mm-hmm. you know, or faith. And so just kind of keep that in mind. But yeah, so baseball was that idol, so to speak, because it was taught to me that I needed a way, you know, to pursue college, pursue, you know, education, and sports was likely going to be that vehicle to do so.
Okay.
Early on, I remember my mom telling me, I don't have any money, so you will need a scholarship.
Yeah.
And I said, okay. Check, I got it.
Yeah.
And so,
get it.
That's awesome. And so, you know, 10, I told you I wasn't that good until I was about 10 or 11. And I kept missing balls in left field. Mm-hmm. And she came to, and I'm not advocating this is what we should do, but she came to the side of the field where no one could kind of see her with a switch. And she was like, if you miss one more ball, in left field, I didn't sign you up to come out here and miss, you know, and be embarrassed. Don't do that. And she could talk to me like that. I understood my mom. And I said, I got it. I never missed a ball again in left field. I never missed a ball.
You just needed the right motivation.
The right motivation. Yeah, and I'm not saying that is always the right way to do that. But it was the right way for her to do it with me. Mm-hmm. And we understood it. And I I would say that's a key point. Pivotal point.
So my middle son, he loves football.
Okay. Yeah.
He loves whatever sport it is, he loves it. But in that season. But so my wife has spent, like, when he was little, like, I mean, 2 years old, 3 years old, first learned how to catch. Like, mm-hmm. we're in the den, she's sitting on the couch, and one of us would just throw ball after ball after ball, a little squishy little football in the den as he runs from left to right, left to right. I mean, just, I'm not exaggerating when I say hundreds of times a night. I mean, and so she would tell him, she's like, when you make it to the NFL one day, you're going to get up there and be like, thank you, mama. Because you're the one that, like, pushed me to do this. So anyway, I hear you. Big ups to your mom.
Right. So you understand. Yeah, you understand. And so around, you know, those, again, one of those influential periods, you know, you're 9, 10, 11, you're very influenced by your community and your environment. And I grew, you know, I got to the point where I was bigger than all the other kids. You know, you always see that kid on the Little League World Series. It's like, is that a man in a boy's uniform?
Or is he 25?
Yes, yeah. Yes, that was me at about 12. And so I had a guy approach me in the rec league we were playing, and he said, "Hey, I want to I want you to come play ball with us. We play on the weekends." I had no idea what travel ball or what any of that meant. Now it's much more extensive. You can start travel ball, I feel like, at five or something. But sure. Anyway, I said, sure, you know, I'm a kid, you know. He was like, "You want to just come play on the weekends?" So I just have to ask my mom, you know. And so back then, you know, the great thing about the community and being from a small town, we're very trusting. And that can hurt you in certain periods, but but it was not, I didn't have that experience, you know. It was just more so, "Hey, Ma, I met this white man," okay, "who said he wanted to take me to play ball." And that was... I didn't grow up around a lot of white people, is what I'm saying. And where I grew up, you know, my neighborhood, there were culturally diverse outside of that, you know, in school. But where I was, it was not common for, you know, white men just coming to the neighborhood and, you know, picking up, you know, kids to come play ball. So it was more so everybody was like, "Who is that? You know, what is Josh doing?" You know, and so he would come pick me up. My mom said, "Sure, you know, whatever." And you know, we were always, I felt like, you ever heard that robbing Peter to pay Paul, you know, and she never wanted me to go anywhere without obviously support. And she would, I know, give me a $20 bill for the weekend. You know, now thinking back on it, what's $20 going to do for the weekend? Even now it's more laughable, but it was a stretch, you know, for her, and she would give it to me. And, I felt like the individual who, that first team I started to play with, he would come pick me up. And he, you know, adults have a different perspective. Looking back on it, he had a perspective that I didn't know he had at the time. And so we would go on weekend trips and he'd take care of everything. And I'd come back Sunday night and I'd give that 20 to my mom. And she would be like, she wouldn't say anything. She would just, you know, she'd say, "Oh, thank you, baby." You know, I said, "I didn't have to use this." And she would, you know, she knew, obviously, as an adult now, I kind of understand, but she knew. And it was the first experience I had of that servant heart, you know, that servant leadership. Like, why would someone come take care of me, you know, and pick me up, allow me to go play all across the Southeast, you know, to begin, you know, my career really at 11, 12 years old, and not ask me for anything. Now, of course, they wanted to win.
Yes.
And I thought I was pretty good. You know, I was a decent player. And but outside of that, it still didn't make sense, the input versus the output that they would have to do or inconvenience themselves to come pick me up, take me to these tournaments and games. And so anyway, I started to understand serving people better. I started to understand, and again, I remember this is through the lens of not having any spiritual background yet.
Yeah.
So it was very abnormal for where I grew up to someone to do something without wanting something back. So, you know, I was like, okay, where is this going? But I was enjoying it, so I would go play ball. That individual introduced me to another coach who was the head coach of that team that I played with from about 12 to 15, 12 to 14, somewhere in there. And he lived about an hour and a half from where I lived. And so when sometimes when you know, the individual from Union couldn't pick me up, he would drive.
Wow.
An hour and a half out of his way. He would probably wake up around 5:36, come pick me up to then take me wherever we were going that day. Atlanta, you know, North Carolina, Charlotte area, you know, or somewhere in the upstate. And that was really weird to me at first. What is, like, these are fathers, right? These are men who work. They have families. That is highly inconveniencing yourself to come pick pick me up? You know, like, could you not have found a better player next door, you know, or in your neighborhood? But they wanted me. And it was the first time I really started to, like I mentioned, understand, you know, serving. And I was really getting an inkling of men of Christ. I didn't know that yet, though. I didn't know their foundation. And so I, you know, when we kind of continued on, you know, we started to play in bigger tournaments. Our team was more so, you know, nationally ranked. We would have to go to these longer trips. Like, so $20 wasn't cutting it, right? Right. So my mom, I don't know how, but she would find the money, you know. And through working hard, she worked swing shifts, first and third shift. She was always working, I felt like. And one thing I never heard my mom do, never heard her do. She lived for 48 years. She passed away last year. And Gabe and I discussed it. But I never heard her complain about one single thing. If she complained, it was I didn't hear it about anything. And even through her later years, through cancer and bone marrow and spinal taps and just nothing, never complained. She would sometimes tell me, she said, I'm just tired today. But that would be about it. Wow. And so we would go on these longer trips, and she would, you know, she was working a lot. She'd maybe give me $40 to $60, I don't know, for a week. Clearly, that's not covering hotel stays, but he would call her. And at first, she was hesitant on these longer trips. She, thank you, but, you know, we can't play in that tournament. A week long in Florida, no, we can't do it right now, you know. And they would, seriously, coaches would call and beg, they say, we got it. Don't worry. We just want, if you just wash his uniform and have him show up, we'll take care of the rest.
That's awesome.
And she would, you know, eventually, obviously, I started playing in those tournaments because she knew how impactful it would be for my career going forward. Because, again, I needed to get a scholarship. That was the ultimate goal, and and not to get long winded, Gabe, but those are some pivotal points. And so when I reached about 15 to 16, I was on a more national scale. I mean, I was playing at a very high level. You know, I was a decent player, and at this time I was not to get into the glory days. But I was ranked number one in South Carolina, left-handed pitcher. And so, you know, I was getting a lot of exposure. And so that came with even more travel and opportunity. And I switched to a more nationally, you know, kind of recognized team, especially in the Southeast, I would say. And coached by an individual here out of Spartanburg. And I remember playing in tournaments that and coming back home, and I'm like, I didn't pay for a thing. You know, I didn't even open the wallet and had this crusty folded up $20 bills, you know. And they were like, oh no, it's, you know, I got it, no worry. Or they would tell me things like, oh, it's just included in the, you know, don't worry about it. So I didn't, and I just played. And so really when I got to college, and I can back up and talk about that. I ended up going to play baseball at Wofford. And I really looked back and started to reflect on a few of those men who were, again, not just serving, but they had a foundation of Christ, and they had a the biggest thing they had was they were showing me how a father responds to not just his family, but other families in the community when they see people in need. Wow. These men were great fathers and still are today. They're all still alive. And they have, I just wanted to kind of spare the details on their names and families, but they, if anything, they showed me how I wanted to relate and serve my future families and communities. Because I wanted to be in a position, which they all were, and not that any of them were wealthy, but it was, money isn't an option when it comes to getting these kids to play, because just one, just impacting one life can impact hundred. You know, you have that one person that can impact thousands.
That's so good.
And what they were doing and building in me, you know, looking back on it, it was extremely, you know, humbling, emotional. It was, you know, just impactful because I had examples, not through my own, but I had examples and multiple examples of different fathers. And I was taking pieces I liked from each one of them.
Yeah.
Because I knew I wanted kids. Mm-hmm. And I'll kind of stop there, that leads into a little bit of a different part. But I knew I wanted kids. And from an early age, you know, I told you, raising my brothers.
Yeah.
And because I always said, man, I want a superhero father. Mm-hmm. You know, I see these fathers show up to the games. You know how many baseball games I played growing up? I mean,
a lot. Sure, yeah.
Probably thousands, you know, and not having a father at those games, that's a lot of games not to have. My mom came to what she could, but that's a lot of games to just be the kid with no one there, you know, who rode in with another player. Because that's a lot of games, and that weighs on you, you know. As you, especially as I got older, you get to more those proud moments where I did accept an offer and I did go to school, and it's like, you know, I got dads flying in from California, Texas, Illinois every weekend to see their kids play when I was playing collegiately, and you know, you part of you wants that. Part of you want to have that, so I couldn't get it. So I knew when I had children, ultimately there was zero barriers that would keep me from supporting my children, you know, growing up. So, and that opens a different can. So I'll stop right there.
No, that's good. What you got? Follow up?
No, I think we're good. Well,
I would just like to say, yeah, thank you for being open and transparent, you know, Josh. And, and the thing that I'm taking away from this episode, because we're going to pause here in just a second, and we'll follow up with a second episode as well that you'll definitely want to listen to, because we're going to get into, again, kind of more of this transition stuff that Josh just mentioned was, you know, he learned from an early age responsibility just by being at his home of how he was getting up, taking care of his brothers, helping around the house, and then service, right? Mm-hmm. He had a servant heart from childhood as he was taking care of his brothers and helping his mom, and then learning that even more service mindset, you know, through the relationships with his coaches and guys on his ball team. And it just, the thing that you said a minute ago is like, you don't know how like impactful like your you know, your influence can be on one kid, because then that one kid might influence hundreds or thousands of other kids down the line. And man, that was powerful, because I just kept thinking of the old, like, you know, drop a little pebble in a pond, right? And you see that ripple effect.
Yes,
out, and that's exactly what you're experiencing. And so, you know, I just want the guys listening here to remember and understand, like, what a difference your life can make, right? Like, I mean, and the things that you're going through, the things that you've went through, like all that has shaped you and is shaping you to make a big difference, you know, in this world in a positive way. And so remember that your good times and your bad times are gonna influence, you know, who you are, your character. And then you have the opportunity to take those times and develop them into something great, you know. And again, Josh, it's just amazing to see how God has had his hand on you, you know, from a young age, and to see what you've done with your life, and then now obviously what you're doing now. So thank you all for joining us today. Make sure that you check out episode 2, because we're going to continue this conversation with Mayor Josh Simpson. So let's make sure that we follow also Lost Boys and Found Fathers on social media, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, right? And then also, you know, please, you know, if you like and you're interested, check out my books, That Will Be Done, Trusting God in the Midst of Suffering, Pain, or Loss. You can find that on Amazon. And then also Every Little Thing, 6 Small Steps to Perfect Peace. You can find that at Amazon, BarnesandNoble.com, Apple Books, or ChristianBooks.com. Thank y'all for joining us today. Let's not be lost. Let's be found in Him.